Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
My friend's livid at the moment. She's sending me livid voice notes because she's bought a house. Incredible scenes. And she had to get a new boiler installed, but the thermostats were all broken. She's already paid the bloke to come and do the thermostats, and he keeps not turning up. So I'm just getting increasingly angry voice notes from my poor friend who is cold.
Now, don't row back on livid. That was a brilliant adjective. And you should have stuck with it. It's one of those ones like apoplectic. There's so many like really like dramatic words for being cross. And livid's really good because it makes me think of turning the colour of liver.
I did see something. I can't remember what it was about, but something bad happened and was tweeted about and described as stunning, as in this is, you know, stunning news. And someone was like, why would you describe this as stunning? It's awful. And someone had to be like, no, literally, like, as in they are stunned. Because I guess that TikTok, the Negroni, Spagliato, stunning, has just...
I think it's always mad exciting when people use awesome in its most literal sense. It's like getting out a gun that's been in plain sight the whole time. Such a cool word. Thanks, the 90s.
Thank you, the 90s, for producing me, Alice Bell, host of the Electronic Wireless Show. This is Rock, Paper, Shotgun's PC Gaming Podcast, and the only podcast you need, and we're on Series 3, Episode 5, if my notes are to be believed, which they are not always. But I am joined this week by James Archer. Hello, James.
Hello.
And Gimli, apparently.
Aloha.
Aloha, Gimli.
It means hello and goodbye. But just hello in this context.
I love the image of Gimli in a little Hawaiian shirt on the beach having a pina colada. That'd be lovely.
Man, he deserves that. Not John Rhys Davies, but Gimli.
Why doesn't John... What's John Rhys Davies done?
he's a git, isn't he, famously?
Is he?
It's not,
oh, no.
Yeah, he's an ornery, like, Brexit-loving bastard, I think.
Oh, no.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I hate to be tribal, but I think that was certainly the case in 2016. Maybe he just had the brain rot, but I mean, you know how I feel about Gimli.
Oh, okay,
take
away his tiki drink.
Yeah. Actually, did you play Gim City that came out a couple of months ago?
That was last year, babes.
No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was last year.
Oh, that was last year. Yeah, we're in January. Yeah, I reviewed it and played a bit of it. I think you'd like it. It's good dwarfing. Good dwarfing.
Excellent. Is it reasonably sort of deep systems, if you'll excuse the pun?
Yes, and good to play with pals, I think. Good.
Lovely.
Yeah. Good options for...
That might be what I've been playing next week.
Oh. Well, call you Cassandra. Oh, no, because that means nobody will believe you, and I do. Or do I, actually? I feel like you'd say you were going to get it and then you just play Age of Empires 2 again.
Oh, just like I played Final Fantasy 13 Lightning Returns.
Exactly.
Completed it.
Famously. How have you been, James?
I'm good. I've been to Los Angeles
to play
a game I can't talk about. But it's interesting. I always enjoy going to the US, but parts of it, especially like out west, are a bit parallel universe-y.
Mm.
Like upon Like, immediately upon leaving the airport baggage claim, I saw a man wearing a cowboy hat on top of a baseball hat.
That's quite stressful.
Mm. Also, just like the area in general, it's like, we're up in this like top left corner of Los Angeles, which is essentially a vast, almost perfectly square grid of just like light ash concrete roads and buildings, which don't appear to have anyone in them. But it's strange because it's like it's either 2 hours to walk somewhere or 5 minutes by car. Anyway, I was there for 3 nights and probably saw fewer than 15 pedestrians total.
It's LA is, I think, the worst city I have been to. Apologies to any native Angelenos, but like, your town is garbage on so many levels.
Wow, you are really bringing the pan metaphor like attitude this week, aren't you?
You've
moved on cities now.
The people who live there, fine, lovely. They have been condemned to live in like a hellish, boring wasteland of concrete and hot piss. And like, I have like two good memories of times I've been in Los Angeles. Like, it's an awful place. And I'm sorry.
What are the good memories, though? Let's be positive.
I had a really, really nice burger dinner there in February last year. It was a lovely burger, lovely dinner. And the time before that, I went for E3 and went to Devolver Digital's Hooters car park party, where the Serious Sound developers played like weird music by hitting boxes.
That does actually sound quite a great party.
It was good, yeah. Someone who was apparently from Nine Inch Nails, either it was Uncle Trent or one of his touring musicians, was dressed in like a wig and a mask and a full length like granny dress and played guitar solos for like half an hour and then disappeared again.
Was this Halloween or just a special time?
It's just the E3. So sort just of games Halloween.
Ordinary Tuesday night in the Hooters car park.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that's a good point. I couldn't think of anything to miss about E3, but I will miss the Devolver Digital things. Those adverts were extraordinarily funny.
They got weird. They got weirder. They did. God bless them. But speaking of, are Devolver too big to be indie now? I don't know, but...
Indie's a very silly term, isn't it?
I mean, it is, but like, it has some use. So at the time that we picked this topic, nothing really was going on. And now we're recording a day later than we do normally. And PlayStation, Sony had their like big Sony Live thing, Sony Direct, I can't remember what it was fucking called, last night. So like, there is news from that. There's a lot of Silent Hill garbage. Death Stranding 2 has been revealed. I understand that during the trailer for that, someone basically just looked at the straight down the barrel of the camera and was like, wow, this death is a real Stranding 2 or something. Like, that sort of thing. That's all on rockpapershotgun.com for your delectation and delight. So go check it out. Bloodlines 2 did a 15-minute gameplay reveal, which is mostly punching, as James observed. A lot of punching. So that has all happened now, but we're not going to talk about that. We're just going to talk about indie games that we feel excited about because Day of the Devs has become a non-profit. I don't know what that means, but...
I'm actually going to play the full card here. What is Day of the Devs?
So Day of the Devs is a... It started off as just a like little hangout thing. It's basically I was going to say Tim Sweeney. It's not Tim Sweeney. Double Fine Productions organize it with another publisher or a sponsor whose name I can't remember, and they're probably thrilled that I can't. And it's evolved into like just a few days where, you know, a bunch of indie developers from all around the world get sponsored to come and they show their stuff. and people can go and play it physically, and there's also like a stream thing. So it's another little thing, announcy thing, but you know, more indie, weird themed. And I actually quite like a lot of the games that get picked up for Day of the Devs. I've liked Saturnalia was a Day of the Devs game. I fucking love that. So, but it's now becoming a charity or a non-profit. I don't know what the difference is. But like, I'm suspicious of people saying that they're non-profits because like my dad's girlfriend made her farm a non-profit for reasons that seem entirely spurious to me. So I don't know. It seems quite easy to become a non-profit in America. That's all I'm saying.
That was an amazing bit of accidental partridge, can I just say?
I don't know. She rescued two sad horses or something. So Day of the Devs is now a non-profit, which means they can secure different kinds of funding or something. But Day of the Devs, I think, is generally good. And given that it's Steam Next Fest next week as well, I thought we'd talk about some indie games that we have enjoyed or are looking forward to in 2024. That's a real tenuous topic choice. But listen.
Hey, yeah. Sometimes you've got to eat the eggs.
It's been a long January, you know? It's been a long
It really one. Has.
Yeah.
It's February.
Yeah. Well.
Brutal.
Exactly. And it's a long February this year as well because it's a fucking leap year. So yeah, James, just before we started recording, you were saying to me that actually a lot of stuff from Steam Next Fest hasn't jumped out at you this year, but have you found anything that has been of interest?
I mean, to be fair, like Steam Next Fest is a big old Argos catalogue of games.
Mm.
I'm sure I've only seen, you know, the equivalent of 4 or 5 pages of it. I did download and try one called Spring Dash, which is a vaguely neon white-ish first-person like speedrunning game. There's, you know, a lot of jumping and a bit of wall running, but you are, instead of being a you know, sharp-dressed man in hell with guns, you're just like a wizard. So you have a magic staff which can like spring some kind of like leaf or mushroom or something out of the ground, and then that's how that lets you like bounce up into the air, and you can like chain bounces together to like hop across islands and smash into walls and find other mushrooms to bounce on. Like it's a bit bare bones, but it feels quite good in terms of the sense of speed and the momentum and all that. It's pretty good.
I must take issue with using the phrase "just a wizard." Those are words that never belong together. But other than that, it's fairer.
Well, your wizardly powers are pretty much just limited to spawning bouncy leaves or shooting like a single magic missile at a spider that might be on a wall.
But it's a bit like Renswind, isn't it? Yeah.
I don't know what the significance of the like actual shooting element is, because you can just kind of like run past them and it's fine. I
don't Okay.
This was like my American football revelation in Horizon Zero Dawn, where my completion speed of the game increased by about 60% when I realised you could just run through all the robots like you're in American football.
Okay, that does sound fun. I'm sorry, Joe, I realised I handed you like the shitty end of the stick then, because I was basically like, James, you said that you hate everything.
I didn't say that.
Yeah.
I didn't say that. I'm not fully informed.
It is a real... It's like shopping at TK Maxx. You have to kind of just almost relax your eyes like you're doing one of those magic eye pictures and just stare at this huge list. Some developers, they have been putting out their demos like a week early to sort of game so they get on the most played, because by the time Next Fest officially starts, they're on that list.
They cheated the bargo.
Yeah.
The Bargo. I really like
Tom
that.
Henderson.
Have you not heard Bargo before?
No, it's good.
Well, I found some fun ones. I'd like to shout out Duck Detective, which is a like point and click 2D and sort of two and a half D, because like the environments are kind of 3D looking, but the characters are sort of 2D little stickery things. Very cute, like, you know, kids book sort of style animals, and you're a duck who is a detective and you go and solve like very low stakes, from what I can gather, crimes. Like you turn up at this bus station and you have to solve like who's been stealing food out of the fridge kind of thing.
Oh, I beg your pardon, you said duck detective. Yeah. I thought you said dark detective.
No, duck detective. But like,
this changes everything. Isn't that a bit Frog Detective?
No, it's not. Okay. It's the name convention is similar, but it is very not like Frog Detective. Because like, yeah, it's very, as you go around and you have to solve, like, you know, like, first of all, you have to get into the bus station kind of thing, and the secretary won't let you in, so you have to like figure out, you go around and you find like the calendar and see like dates circled and find out what day it is, and then you look in the suggestion box, and then you examine her and you see like her name tagging and stuff, you put it all together and work out that she's sad because no one's wished her happy birthday, and then she'll let you in kind of thing. But the reason I really like it is it's very cute, like looks lovely, kid animation kind of style, but the duck detective is played very straight as like a grizzled kind of noir detective. So like the first thing he says is like, "What chance did I stand? A newly divorced duck who can't afford his rent."
Oh no.
And then he has to work out like what he spent the last of his money on, and it's like bread, because bread is the stand-in for like being an alcoholic. And he's like, "The smell of toast helps me sleep."
Okay, that's sort of amazing.
It's amazing. And then, like, his phone rings and it's someone trying to, like, employ him, but he just screams, like, "Anna, have a change, duck. I've not touched a slice in weeks." It's really funny. Just completely, like, playing all those tropes really straight. I really enjoyed it. So
that sounds like okay.
It's really good, yeah. I also played one called Botany Manor, which is another, like, little puzzle game, but the puzzle is, like, growing weird plants. So,
God, that is Alice bait if I ever heard
it. I know. So you get given like a seed, and you're like, "I want to grow this kind of plant to, you know, advance the next part of the game." And then you have to work out what atmospheric conditions you need to create to make the plant bloom. So the first one is like, make it hot. You have to make it a specific temperature and then it will bloom. The second one is like, it will only bloom in a lightning storm, so you have to like artificially make a kind of flash thunder sort of environment for it. It's really cute, so I like that a lot. And also, and these will, by the way, listener, we're doing a collection. The whole staff are doing a demos from Steam Next Fest. You should try. I've also been trying some horror ones, and I tried one that I think Nate will like. That is called Normal Fishing. It's called Normal Fishing. Normal Fishing is a retro handheld inspired adventure where everything goes exactly as expected and there's absolutely nothing to worry about. So you play someone who has just moved to the a lake side house with your wife, who has weird staring eyes and massive cans, and she's just like, "Good evening, husband. We must get, you know, we have a lifestyle that I'm accustomed to, so you must support this by going fishing and selling the fish." So you go fishing on the lake, and it's sort of standard, like, you earn money by selling the fish, and then you can get, like, better fishing equipment and a stronger boat and whatever. And then, but, like, the fishing bit itself is a mini game that's sort of like a 2D, like, side-scrolling shooter, where you shoot food pellets at the fish while dodging like junk from the bottom of the lake, and also the fish can, I guess it's shitting at you and you have to avoid that as well, and then you can eventually catch the fish. But then things get weird. There are like weird, like the tentacles and like your wife and the other fishermen get progressively weirder, and in the demo you have to fight like a sudden giant mutant crab with a shotgun. And that's not even the weirdest bit. I would say that's a spoiler, but it's kind of not. So, like, yeah, normal fishing is a kind
of... Okay.
You know, if you like the sort of Daniel Mullins twist in the tail sort of thing.
Did you play Dave the Diver in the end?
No, I didn't.
Because, I really did like that. Mm. I would like another Dave the Diver.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of, like, James, are there any, like... Because let's go to you, Nate, because you don't have access to the Steam portal that we've been using to do the demo stuff. But are there any indie things that you're looking forward to? Any smaller games, like a Dave the Diver, that you're kind of looking forward to in 2024?
I must admit, I'm a bit out of the loop on that. A lot of the things I'm looking forward to are... Actually, no, it's fair enough. There are a few things. I was talking about, like, endlessly being edged by semi-fictional dinosaur games.
Yes.
We just saw some more footage, I think, from Instinction, which looked quite impressive until I realised it was, like, quite a lot of cunning ways to do a lot with... Mm. With assets you've bought in a pack, basically. It really sucks that the genres I like, specifically like city building and dinosaur simulation, seem to be like the biggest hotspots for sort of things that never end up happening. So I've just gotten used to not looking forward to things.
Yeah, okay.
That's my cool answer.
I was going to say, dinosaur simulation is probably not like the most mainstream of
but
genres.
But think how many people like dinosaurs. Like,
people do like
you'd
dinosaurs.
You'd be hard-pressed to find people who don't like dinosaurs.
This is true.
You would think it would be one of the main genres of game, but we digress.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that because no one's ever had the chance to be wronged by a dinosaur?
It's such a reasonable statement.
Dinosaurs have never hurt us. It's true.
I like that.
James, are there any upcoming indie games that you are enthused about?
Yeah, so the big one for me is Resistor, which I think I talked about like a couple of episodes ago. Weren't we doing like games looking forward to in 2024? Resistor is the car PG that's kind of like a cross between, I guess, Burnout and Mass Effect. I talked about that quite a bit in episode one, and there hasn't been anything new about it since. So moving on, I only learned about this a couple of days ago from Alice O. But there's this game called Militsania, I think it's pronounced.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an immersive sim where you're trying to escape this village that's being watched over by a massive policeman.
Is this the one that's been around a while?
I think so, yeah. He's a completely sapient and human-like policeman. He's just like 200 meters tall.
And just reaches down, and it's
horrifying. Yeah. Like, if he catches you doing a crime, then he just like picks you up in his like giant cop fingers, raises you up into his face, and be like, "Don't let me catch you doing that again."
He feels like some sort of Kafka plot device. It's great.
Well, yeah. Like I think the whole thing is meant to be like evocative of, you know, actual oppressive societies and that kind of like that feeling of overbearing dread and lack of freedom. Because it's like it's mostly like a social immersive sim, like there's not really combat. There's like a bit of stealth. Mm-hmm. But it's mainly about how you like interact with and talk to the policeman and how you interact and talk to like other people around the village. So I guess it's also kind of like playing on like how much do people just play the game to get by when they're living in, you know, this horrible, oppressive society.
Can you reason with the horrid policeman?
I think so, yeah. Well, maybe to a degree, like, I think you can, like, flatter him, and you can give him gifts. I'm not sure what you could give a giant policeman.
Yeah, but you can like tell him like his style.
A punch on the nose.
Yeah. So and like his mood towards you, I guess, affects how severely he punishes you for like doing certain things. Like if you're like on really good terms with him, like you could steal maybe what appears to be a worthless item to him, and then he'll be like, oh yeah, whatever. Whereas if he's cross with you, then he'll immediately arrest you, or you know, pick him up with giant cop fingers. Yeah, it's just like I love immersive sims, but a lot of them are based just come down to like you can do shooting or you can do stealth, and yeah, so Militsania is kind of more of an interesting social satirical slant on there.
Mm.
What language is it in?
Russian.
Well, the title, that is.
They're Russian.
Yeah. I think it's Russian, yeah.
And they got, it's very interesting because they got like the Russian, a Russian TV news channel when like the trailer came out and everyone went crazy for it, went wild for it. They were like saying this is like anti-Russian propaganda, basically, because the Militsiona is like a kind of, I believe, like a sort of kids, you know, story of like a good cop kind of thing. I will link, because I did an interview about it and I'm mangling what they said, but I'll link to that in the show notes because it's very interesting when they talk about it.
Yeah, it does sound.
Mm.
Yeah. They've also been quite outspoken against the war in Ukraine, so probably not further endearing them to,
yes, indeed. Russia, yeah.
Russian state media.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks good. There's also Thank Goodness You're Here, which looks lovely and just perfectly captures the vibe of being in a lightly rubbish English town.
that's the one that looks weird, doesn't it? It looks like
it's like cartoon, like hand-drawn, hand animated.
Yeah.
I'm still not entirely sure how it works, though. Like, you appear to just potter about doing, like, odd jobs for weirdos, which is fine. But I also wonder, like, is there an actual narrative or a structure?
Mm.
Which I don't know yet, but yeah, it looks fun.
There's a lot of upcoming, like, just build a nice townscape games as well that have no, like, aim and no, like, constrictions on you and stuff. It's just like, just build a nice little environment. So there's like a cyberpunk city one, there's a little holiday town one, there's a bunch of them coming out. So, you know, people are kind of like, I think there's a lot of games coming out that just like just try and chill out. Yeah.
Is like, this what cozy is as a genre modifier?
I don't know. It's weird. I
don't understand it.
Yeah, I think it.
I think cozy is more referring to tone, whereas chill is maybe more referring to action. Because I think to be a chill game as opposed to a cozy game, like there's like no stakes, I guess. Whereas there can be stakes in like a cozy crime book because you know people are still getting murdered. But
yeah, there you go. Good. Well done, James. Thank you. I'm glad you're
there.
Here.
You go. The only non-author here delivered a masterclass. Yeah.
Well done. I would like to do a quick shout out, first of all, to 20 Small Mazes, which is out tomorrow, I think. That is a free puzzle game that is just 20 small mazes. They're kind of stacked on top of each other. They're, you know. It's just a screen of little mazes on bits of paper and you can move them around, do them in different order, but all the mazes are a bit weird, so one of them folds down the middle and you have to sort of fold in and out to move the ball around. One of them is a maze drawn by the developer's six-year-old daughter in felt tip, and it has like an orc that you have to get past and things. One is under construction and you drive like a little truck and you can bust through exactly four walls in the maze. It's great. I really loved it, and it's free and out tomorrow. It's a big shout out.
I respect it, but I wish it was called 30 Small White Mazes and One Massive One. which has got a Minotaur in it.
Oh, okay. I'll pass that on. Also, Horses is out this year, which I haven't seen a lot of yet. I think the demo's coming soon. It's from Santa Ragioni, the devs of Saturnalia, who I always have to disclaim that I'm sort of friendly with the head of the studio, to the extent that I make fun of him for being all like, I love art, and then when he's like sick and sad watching all the Star Wars TV shows. Horses is like a weird horror game where you're working on a horse farm, but and you have to like stay there for 14 days, but like all the horses look like they're naked men with like horse masks on, and you can ride the horses by like them, like you sitting on their shoulders and stuff. Looks mental, but in like the good way. So I'm interested to like actually see kind of how that works and stuff. Looks very cool. I think that's kind of, because I don't want to, like you, James, don't want to go over what we said in a previous episode with our most anticipated games. But, you know, as Nate said, indie is maybe an unhelpful term, but does have some uses. And I think, you know, celebrating the smaller things is good. So,
Yay!
Let's move on from talking about games that are sort of soon to be out to talking about games that we've been playing. So, James, what have you been playing this week?
I've been playing Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. I was saying to Edge the other day, I've always liked and admired the Like a Dragon, nay, Yakuza games, though more for the vibes and the tone, and I guess a presentation, rather than how they actually play as games.
Yeah,
like there's always like really there are like really great moments in there, but also there's a lot of repetition and grinding, and sometimes these like weirdly like pointless and tedious little quests where you just have to go to a shop and buy a beer or something, or like buy a sandwich.
Yeah,
and with Infinite Wealth, like there's still a bit of that, but and also, like, there was talk from like the developers before it came out about how, oh, it's like the biggest game we've ever made. It'll take you 3,000 hours to see everything and all that. So I was going to play it for hardware reasons, but I was still a bit like, oh no. But actually, it is massive. But the way it paces itself and like eases you in to all its different mechanics and characters and minigames is actually very, very well done. I've never felt...
How does it live up to the ludicrous boast of its title? Sorry.
In Infinite Wealth.
Yeah, have you...
I don't know.
Have you been able to demonstrate the acquisition of Infinite Wealth?
I haven't yet. I'm normally broke because I spend a lot of money on ice cream to regenerate health. And my only reliable source of income is being like a crazy taxi-inspired like Uber Eats delivery man.
Is it? I feel like the infinite wealth is metaphorical because it's like your friends, because you can gather like a gang or something, can't you?
Oh, the infinite game. Wealth is the friends made along the way.
Yeah.
Oh, Asgard is people, not a place. Got you.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I do like all the party members in Infinite Wealth. They're cool folk. Yeah, I've never felt overwhelmed in the same way I did with, for example, Baldur's Gate 3. I guess especially with like the sideshows and the minigames, I guess like the Pokemon thing, they're introduced the way that they're introduced is you're normally like going along like doing something else, like doing the main quest or whatever, and you kind of get like a cutscene happens and you get locked in to what turns into like this little side quest, which is itself like kind of like a tutorial, like an introductory thing to this side game.
That might
sound like it, like they're just getting in the way, like, oh my god, like just let me do what I was initially planning to do. But they are like usually pretty fun, and they're also like these introductions are quite short, so you always get like a good like understanding of how they work. But then once you're done with that tutorial, like if you want to, like you can just completely banish it from your memory. It's completely like you don't actually have to do any of that going forward, and it's not something you have to like keep in mind really, unless you want like the specific rewards that they give. Partly why I get on well with this and not Baldur's Gate 3 was because Baldur's Gate had like encyclopedias worth of systems and mechanics and just things to consider all the time, whereas that's not really the case in Infinite Wealth. I know they're very different games, but yeah, it's just a lot easier for someone with crap like FPS ruined attention span like me to get into it. And it's just generally a fun game. It's a fun game full of fun people, and like typical Yakuza crime drama meets fantasy RPG silliness. Like I saw a video someone put on Twitter that had Ichiban, who is your main character, like run into a palm tree, white out, and then some like Nintendo DS looking Pokemon thing appears from the sky in full Nintendo DS style graphics. And it turns out that was like an edit by someone on Twitter referring to some Pokemon joke that I'm not party to. But if someone had told me, no, that's real, that's from the game, I would absolutely believe them, because it would be fully tonally consistent. Yeah. Yeah, with the game. It's nice to be around. You don't see Gimli on the Hawaii beach, unfortunately. Otherwise it's good. Even like the turn-based stuff, which I don't normally get on with, I am getting on with, because you can like physically move your party members around a bit, like within a limited space, while the enemies are also moving, and because of that, and because there's usually a bunch of like environmental hazards lying around, it's a lot more engaging to me, because it's not just choosing actions from a menu. It's about looking for openings and like positioning yourself properly and jumping on opportunities when enemies bunch up, or like they're near a bicycle you can hit them with, and stuff like that. So it's a lot more active, I guess, than I normally find turn-based games.
Hmm. But I mean, I've never, like, it's one of those games where I like the sound of it, but yeah, I've never. I'm glad that the Yakuza Like a Dragon series exists in the world, but have no real desire to play it myself. But I love the screenshots.
Maybe he always had a lot of good things to say, didn't he?
R.I.P. in peace.
I mean, not just good things to say in general about Yakuza. That would be an incredibly weird observation.
Well, he didn't. In general, Matthew didn't have a lot of good things to say. So complained about stuff. Glistening food. Ed is a big fan of the series. He gave it a lovely review. So check it out. It's got loads of weird mini games and like a sort of Pokemon, and then like a sort of island sim thing. Yeah, loads of stuff going on with it.
So, like an Animal Crossing type thing.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. I've been playing Grand Blue Fantasy Relink, I've been trying to play it. So God bless them, they sent out code a long time ago, and it worked the first time I booted it up, and then it just didn't work. It crashed. It not responded every time I tried to boot it up. It wouldn't get to the start screen for about a week. It's been working a bit better this week, but I did not manage to play enough of it in time for the review embargo, which is kind of a shame because I did enjoy it. What I played of it so far, it's an action RPG, JRPG, that is based on a mobile game, which I had not played. And thus, the characters do feel a little bit thin to start with, but they have like little optional backstory things you can do to find out about them if you want. But it's set in a world where there's no like land. Everything is just floating islands in the sky. There is no earth. So everyone gets about in these big airships, and you're a crew of skyfarers, and you have a little friend who can control like a big spirit dragon thing called Bahamut. And she goes off cracked, and all the spirits around start going off their rockers. So you have to go fight like a big ice monster and a big air monster. And the boss fights are really big spectacle kind of. I got stuck on one last night that was against like a giant, like a Shadow of the Colossus kind of big robot thing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was really difficult.
Do you fight them like in the airship? Is it like an airship game? No.
That would ball.
No, alas, it is. You play as the captain, and but you can play as any of the other crew, and you can unlock new crew members like sexy ghost girl and like tiny swordsman, and you know, extremely handsome knight and all that kind of shit. And then it's ground, like over the shoulder, third person crew kind of combat. So you take a team of four with you, and they all have different abilities. The combat is easy enough that you don't have to understand it really, and you can just spam like attack and, you know, Diablo 4 your way through it. But it gets a bit grindy in the boss fights, because the bosses are all, like, they're nicely designed, but they are bullet sponges to force you to understand the combat, which has a lot, like, you can link attack with other members of your team, and you can build up link power, and you can all, if you all do a special attack at once, then you sort of do a Megazord special attack that does loads of damage, and if you sort of don't understand how to make that work, the boss fights take fucking ages. But they take ages anyway, because they're such like bullet sponge monsters. But it's fun. It's a lot about spectacle. When you're doing big attacks, you cannot see what is happening on the screen at all. I like the enemy designs. I like the world designs. And I even sort of could get on board with like the incredibly earnest story, you know, where like there are times where you get to pick a dialogue response, but it's like, what should we do? There are still civilians left in town, but we need to escape. And you can choose to say, like, we can't leave them behind. Or, like, there's no way we're leaving now. Like, you always do the right thing, you know? Like, the moral choice is, what flavor of good do you want to be? No, I kind of like it, you know? It's very charming. It's very, like, JRPG kind of fantasy tropey. But, like, it does it all in a very sweet way. And I'm not mad at it at all. And my favourite character is a mage, a magician woman called Rosetta, who is like a rose-themed wizard who just conjures like big roses and wears like a thigh-high, like split to the hip kind of curtain dress. It's ridiculous.
Good sensible wizard clothes.
Yeah. Everyone is dressed like either a knight or a sexy baby, basically. but it's good. It's fun. It's very, yeah, just all about spectacle and like just big fights. Just does get a bit repetitive sometimes. But I've only played about half of the main quest. I haven't been able to do any co-op, really. And I know for other people, they haven't had any problems at all. So I don't want it to, I don't want it to sound like this game is irreparably broken. But as a cross-section of three people who got the code, for one person, it seems to be working fine. One person, it's not working at all. And me, it's sort of like, it was like not working. Then it got down to like 1 in 8 attempts to boot. It did it successfully. I think we're about 50% success rate at the moment. Maybe like 33%. So like a 1 in 3. Maybe
I mean,
if
those are the characteristics of an aircraft I'd bought, I wouldn't be delighted.
Yes. Yeah, so, but I don't know if that's to do with us getting an early copy, but I've tried it with the, you know, what is, because you can, this is very behind the curtain for listeners, but you get, when you get review copies, codes to unlock on Steam, you will sometimes be given a code to unlock like a beta versions where the devs are like pushing changes to it more, you know, regularly, because they're still sort of working on it up to release and things like that. And I've tried it on both the retail version and the beta pre-release version. So I don't know.
Oh, those are the versions where you can press C twice to make Sonic fuck, aren't they?
What?
I just took a sip of my tea then, because I imagined you were going to say something sensible.
It's the way you said it was like, it had sort of an uncle at Nintendo energy to it. It's obviously completely true.
I get access to like a special version.
And Goofy actually comes out of your computer and spits a load of honey into your kitchen, so you don't have to buy honey. It's great.
Yeah.
Actually, that might have happened in Kingdom Hearts.
But that's what I've been playing this week. I went on a long time then. Nate, what have you been playing?
So I've continued to get up to date on strategy games with Lord of the Rings Battle for Middle-earth 2.
Well done.
From 2005, I think. Yeah, all of that Starship Troopering has got me kind of hankering for, you know, that the Dawn of War era of RTS, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I get it. Yeah.
I watched a YouTube video where someone was trying to get through the entirety of Battle for Middle-earth, or is it War of the Ring? It's Battle for Middle-earth, without losing a single unit, and they were just in complete hell trying to do that. And for some reason, it made me think, oh, I'll download that. I've just been throwing orcs into the Mensa, though. I don't care who lives or dies.
Okay, good. Lovely. With that said, then, I should have talked about my thing last, because that would have been a better segue to fucking talking about hardware. Curses!
Actually, Alice, I was thinking of saying, I do feel a dash of kinship for the fact that you guys are now experiencing the fun of shit not working for no goddamn reason, because that's something that happens to me like every week working in hardware. Because you plug something in and it just does nothing.
It's astonishing that we've invented computers all this time and they still don't really work.
It's kind of why I like the character of PCs over consoles, though, because it's kind of like, yeah, like it gives them character to have to like sap them a bit to make them work.
That's like someone trying to like convince themselves they've not just bought a monster dog.
James, what's going on in hardware this week?
So I've been testing and reviewing a couple of the new RTX 40 Super graphics cards from NVIDIA. And one of them is really good. That's the 4070 Super, because that's just basically a straight upgrade on the 4070. It just pumps out more frames whilst not really costing any more. The other, the 4080 Super, is... I'm not sure why it exists. Right. Because it is cheaper than the original 4080. Like, the starting price is about £300 less, which is a lot of money. But it isn't really faster, and I don't understand what they were thinking. Because if you just wanted a cheaper 4080, then why not just do a price cut? Like, why go through the trouble of making another card entirely? But it doesn't make sense, because it's been designed and built the same people and machines that the 4070 Super was, which actually is a meaningful improvement. So I don't get it. I don't get it. It makes no sense. You can't even really be scathing towards a 4080 Super, because ultimately, like, it is a better graphics card because it's cheaper. Like, if you take the like two the poor performance levels of like the 4080 and the 4080 Super, and they're basically the same, then, you know, obviously it makes sense to just get the cheaper one. But again, like, why does it need to exist? It's just one of those situations where you can only like look at while putting your hands in the air and saying, okay, I guess.
Can I ask for a traditional beans metaphor, please?
Beans metaphor. Okay. It's like if the beans company has previously made two brands of beans, one which tastes nice and costs a cowboy one silver dollar, and another brand of beans which has a more unctuous sauce but costs $5. And there's a minor backlash from disappointed cowboys, because $5 is arguably too much to pay for one can of beans. So a year later, the same company puts out two updated bean brands. One which still costs a dollar but tastes a bit better than the previous $1 beans. And the other is basically the $5 bean recipe again, but this time it costs $4. Now, all the townsfolk agree that technically this bean situation has improved for us, but was it necessary to do a whole rebranding exercise for the more expensive beans when they could have just put a different sticker on it?
I'm with you.
You know, I'm having a bit of an epiphany.
What's that?
Like, You've become very consistently skilled at these beans metaphors to the extent where I can actually start to harvest data from them. And many times the metaphor has been, beans were perfectly good, but they're trying to invent them again. Like, it seems to boil down to people coming up with, beans that don't even taste better than the beans that already exist.
I do sometimes think about this when I'm reviewing hardware, because it is often the case where, like, something new that replaces an old model, like an old graphics card or an old CPU or something, and it's like, this puts out 5 frames per second more, and it's like, what am I doing? Like, what?
Yeah, scrabbling for eggs. Yeah.
Also in this analogy, there's a third tin of beans which costs about $2.50, called the Beans 4070 Ti Super, but nobody has let me taste test it yet.
It sounds delicious. Thank you, James. That's a lovely hardware this week.
Towers on fire, sadly.
Towers on fire, which means that's just about all we
have
time
yours?
For. That's just about all we have time for on this week's episode of the Electronic Wireless Show, Rob Paper Shotgun's PC Gaming Podcast, and the only podcast you need, in my opinion. It was Series 3, Episode 5, and all that remains is for us to do some recommendations, because every week we recommend something that is not a video game. James, what are you recommending this week?
I'm recommending the YouTuber Ramble Lime, which is the word ramble, then the word lime, but one word. Who makes video essays on both popular and niche RPGs. Specifically, I recently watched and enjoyed his retrospective on Fallout New California, which is one of the first fan-made, like, total conversion mods for Fallout New Vegas. And I love learning about ambitious failures, regardless of the medium. So it was a very interesting look back at this mod and, like, what went wrong with it and what it actually did well. I haven't watched it yet, but he's also done a 90-minute analysis of Fallout the Frontier, which is an infamously cursed, yet also very high-concept New Vegas fan game. So I'm kind of rubbing my hands when I can sit down and watch that.
Okay, I love a video essay. Yeah. I'm all over that.
Yeah, okay. Although I think the downside is watching him has kind of, like, fudge my algorithm a bit, because now YouTube is recommending me, like, quite nasty video essayists.
Oh no.
I found that as soon as I got into video essays, it's just like trying to tell me about, like, streamers who ended up molesting people. It's horrible.
Yeah, there's, it's a, like, lot, drama explained, why everyone at Bethesda deserves to die. It's not,
there's a lot of drama stuff. I avoid video game stuff for a similar reason. So I just have my bread tubers that I like, who just do, like, takedowns of fintech and deep dives about weird theme parks. So try. For whatever reason, you get into video games, it gets toxic real fast. So, but that sounds great. I'm interested in that. Nate, what are you recommending this week?
Well, I'm panicking now because I've forgotten the name of the YouTube channel, but it's really good. Hang on, here we go. I think this was the one. Oh, there's two. Tank Tested and Tank Tested 2, which is their second channel. They just do a lot of clips of aquarium fish in their natural habitats. I've been watching a lot of footage from the Rio Negro. In Peru, it's probably my favourite river. And this is basically for Bjorn in the Discord. But it's a very good, relaxed fish watching. And they seem to be running quite a good, sustainable local collection scheme as well. If Bjorn from the Discord could chime in on that, I'd be interested to get their take. But yeah, if you like watching little colourful fish swim around dead leaves, it's got you covered.
Sweet. Who doesn't? I am going to recommend a book that my mum got me for Christmas. It's called From Malinhead to Mizzenhead by Joanna Donnelly. and it's journey around the sea area forecast of Ireland. So she starts off by explaining the shipping forecast, kind of the, you might, if you're English, you might know it. It's, you know, it goes like Dogger Bank rising 998 heading southwest. It does all that.
What? And there's one Dogger Bank.
Yeah, it's basically.
Yeah, it's real, man.
What goes on there?
There's a big dog. He runs a bank. He's got infinite wealth. You should know.
That's why I remember it, because it's the funniest name. But different sections of the sea around the coast have different names. And then at like 6 a.m. and midnight, you get a report on the radio about which bits of the sea are kind of stormy, so that men on the boats know where to go to not die. And they do it around Ireland as well, obviously enough. And she explains what all the terms mean and the weather and stuff. And then she sort of goes around the coast talking about like storms and why the weather is sort of like it is there. And, you know, people she meets there and stuff. It's really good. It's a lovely cover as well. Good non-fiction book. That's my recommendation.
Does sound good.
Yeah. So, yeah, you keep your lowbrow game YouTube shit.
Wow. He's going full pan anecdote mode.
I know, yeah.
She's panhandled.
As if I
don't spend hours watching the same videos about streamers that killed their girlfriend. So that really is it for this week's episode of the Electronic Wireless Show, Rob Paper Shotgun's PC Gaming Podcast. You can find us on all your social medias, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, what have you. Just give us a search. You can email us podcast@rockpapershotgun.com for questions, suggestions, feedback. Please rate and review us 5 stars on all your podcatching apps. And please join the Discord as well. The link's in the show notes where you can hang out. There is a channel for talking about the podcast, but there are loads of channels for talking about loads of different things. And it's a very nice place to hang out. But for all of your PC gaming needs, just go to www.rockpapershotgun.com. But for now, it's goodbye from me, Alice Bell. It's goodbye from Gimli. It's good, Gimli.
That's the best noise I could do. It's tragic.
Yeah, yeah. And it's goodbye from James. Bye, James.
Goodbye.
Bye.